This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
No rebound yet in the housing market.
Is it time to stop waiting?
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles. Hello, I'm Steve Chiotakis.
And I'm Jeremy Hobson. It's the Marketplace Midday Update, our podcast from Marketplace.org. Today is Tuesday, September 27th.
Coming up, the Greek prime minister's in Germany asking for more help and marketing his country.
Just how influential is the Federal Reserve when the board talks? Do markets still listen?
And Cheech and Chong have some brownies to sell you. Yes, brownies. Yes, Cheech and Chong. No, not what you think.
It's a great story. That and more coming up on the Marketplace Midday Update.
Investing, renting, sending your kid to college? Listen to the Marketplace Money Podcast. Find it on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
Let's start with the housing market. The closely watched Case-Shiller Index of home prices is out today, and it says that in July, home prices inched up about 1% from June, but were still down 4.1% from a year ago. Julie Niemann is an analyst with Smith Moore & Company. She's with us from St. Louis, as she is every Tuesday. Good morning.
Morning, Jeremy.
So, Julie, a little bit of an inch up in July. Is that a glimmer of hope for the housing market?
Not really, because the sale of new homes was down the fourth month in a row. It's just the summer selling season, and you're still down year over year over 4%. The two areas that were up, Detroit, because you can buy a house there for the price of a New York dinner, and D.C., well, there's just no shortage of people who travel Yellow Brick Road to Emerald City.
Well, Julie, I heard the president's former top economist, Austin Goolsbee, over the weekend on TV saying essentially that we've got to stop waiting for the housing market to drag us out of this economic slump, that we're going to have to focus on other things. What do you think of that?
Well, it's exactly right, because the consumer used their houses as an ATM over the last 15 years leading up to this housing collapse. They took out equity, spent it on toys, games, prizes, vacations. Now incomes are flat and debt is growing to dangerous levels, and you're going to continuously see this working it off. So the consumer can't bring us out of this mess. It's going to be manufacturing and exports, machinery, farm equipment, earth-moving equipment, autos, aircraft technology. All of this enhances productivity, but this is a long cycle. Now, arguably, you can say that it's healthier than the bubble-prone area, but it's going to take a long time to take us out. And the recovery is going to depend upon our trading partners as well, and they're sliding into recession. But the dollar is likely to resume its slide. Once we get past this euro panic, that's going to make us competitive in both in price and product quality, but it is a long cycle.
That's Julie Niemann, analyst at Smith Moore & Company in St. Louis.
And well, with home prices lower, Jeremy and Julie, you'd think it'd be easier for folks to get into some of these homes for sale across the country. But the federal government's about to lower the size of home loans that it's going to guarantee, which means people will need more money to buy and more money to put down on those houses. In California, where it's pretty expensive to buy a house anyway, you've seen some of these houses are $500,000 for a small house here in Southern California. Real estate agents are bracing for an even bigger tanking market. Guy Sakala heads up Inside Mortgage Finance magazine. He's with us now to talk about it. Morning, Guy.
Good morning.
The government increased these loan limits in the first place, right?
Exactly. Coming out of the credit crisis of 2008, banks were struggling to stay afloat, and one of the things they did was basically pull out of the mortgage market and refuse to make any new mortgages except those insured by the government. This left a huge void in the so-called jumbo mortgage market, which at that time was any mortgage above $417,000. So Congress stepped in and said, okay, on an emergency basis, we're going to cover part of that jumbo market by raising the government loan limit in high-cost areas to $729,750. Don't ask me where they came up with that number.
Wow.
Come this Saturday, the loan limit goes from $729,750 to $625,500.
with the housing market in such bad shape, I mean, why would they let it happen now?
Well, that's the real estate industry's argument. The flip side of that question is basically 9 out of 10 new mortgages being made are being funded or financed through the federal government. And the idea is that we never intended this to happen. If we don't start rolling it back incrementally, we're never going to get the government out of the mortgage market. And also, we're never going to encourage private lending.
Can the housing market handle this, Guy?
Another way of looking at it is, how much business are we talking about that's at this higher loan level? Nationwide, it's probably under 5%. This is going to hit California harder than any area because California has most of the high-cost loan limits in place in that state than any place else.
Guy Sekala, publisher of the trade journal Inside Mortgage Finance. Guy, thanks.
You're very welcome.
Stocks have been up for the most part around the world today. European markets had major rebounds with more positive news coming out of the European debt crisis story. Shares in Asia were up 3 and 4%. Even here at home, markets are higher as we record this program.
One stock in this country, though, that's definitely not up, Jeremy, as you know, and we've been watching this. Shares of Eastman Kodak, very close to their lowest level since the 1950s. That was before Kodachrome. Remember Kodachrome?
Paul Simon? I know what Kodachrome is, but I don't remember.
Paul Simon sang a song about
That's
it.
That's anyway, all I know about Kodachrome is that song, basically.
There are concerns about whether the Rochester, New York company has enough cash to remake itself as a printer company. You might have seen Kodak printers proliferating across electronic stores across the country. No one's using film anymore, and that's one big problem.
It's not really Kodak's moment. Well, it was a photo finish in the Senate to get a stopgap measure passed. To keep the government in business, the bill would avoid a shutdown at the end of the week, although it really only pushes it off
just to the end of the week.
Till next week. Yeah. And there's another House vote coming up later this week, and then they're going to be voting again next week on a longer-term extension. So really, we've just bought ourselves a few more days.
Yeah. Federal Emergency Management Agency also got $2.7 billion in disaster relief money that had been held up, too. So that is one positive
thing. That's been cleared up.
That has been cleared up for now, anyway. But you can check out more numbers at our website, marketplace.org, and follow us on Twitter. I'm at Radio Chio.
And I am at Jeremy Hobson.
Looking for a good read? Visit the Big Book blog at marketplace.org. Listen to author interviews and read excerpts from the Marketplace bookshelf. Online at marketplace.org/thebigbook.
And now the Marketplace Global Perspective. Greek Prime Minister George Papandreou is in Germany today talking with that country's leader, Chancellor Angela Merkel. And Greece has been besieged by a debt crisis that threatens its solvency and threatens to spread all across Europe. Germany is Europe's biggest economy and is footing much of the bailout bill, the Greek bailout bill, and others perhaps. The BBC's Steve Evans is with us now from Berlin to talk about it. Hi, Steve.
Hello. Good day to you.
What are they talking about, the Prime Minister and the Chancellor?
They're talking about the euro bailout and the plight of Greece. There's no doubt about that. But what's really happening is that Prime Minister Papandreou is in Berlin making a sales pitch to the members of the German parliament who decide on Thursday whether to give him the money for the bailout that's already been agreed. So he's come to Berlin and he's telling everybody who cares to listen, if you lend us the money, we will repay. We are not a poor economy. We are an economy which has been in the past badly managed. So he's here as part of a political exercise to convince lawmakers that their taxpayers' money is safe in his hands.
The people of Germany aren't quite so convinced. We've heard for so long how average citizens there feel about lending money to Greece, and they're not happy about it. But what about the business community there?
The business community is a little bit annoyed that Chancellor Merkel hasn't made the case for the euro more strongly. She's been pulled two ways. She's very committed to the euro, but at the same time, her voters talk to her, and her voters are sceptical. They say, we're going into an increasingly hard time here. Why are you giving our money away?
The BBC's Steve Evans in Berlin. Steve, thank you.
You're welcome.
So the question is, with so much German discontent with the bailouts, why is Chancellor Angela Merkel so willing to help? Well, Margaret Heckel is the author of a best-selling biography about Chancellor Merkel, and she also joins us now from Berlin. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, how does Angela Merkel see her role in the European debt crisis?
Well, she definitely wants to keep the euro because she knows that if Greece goes out of the euro, or if the markets force Greece out of the euro, the whole idea of the common denomination will fall. And Germany has been profiting quite a lot from the euro, and we are an export nation, and it's quite clear that we need the euro to continue to be such a strong exporter to the world.
So there are obvious interests for Germany to keep Europe together, but is there a sense of duty on the part of Angela Merkel? Does she feel like it's her responsibility to keep this all intact?
I think so. Nobody wants to be the chancellor who sort of destroyed the euro. And I think she sees it as her duty, although the Germans are really turning against financing the rest of Europe. So it's a very tight line that she's walking.
Germany is a country that has seen a lot of history in the last 100 years or so. It's been the center of a lot of history. Do you think that Merkel sees herself right now in another one of those really big historic moments for Germany?
Yes, I think she does. For her, it's definitely a formative moment now with the euro. Absolutely comparable to the time when the wall came down over 20 years ago.
Margaret Heckel is the author of a best-selling biography of the German Chancellor Angela Merkel. Thanks so much for joining us.
You're welcome.
Well, back here at home, General Motors workers are voting on a new United Auto Workers labor contract this week. Similar contracts are still to be negotiated at Chrysler and at Ford, where workers are hoping to share in that car maker's recent success. Marketplace's Elisa Roth reports.
Ford has been selling more cars, getting higher prices for them, and gaining market share all over the world. The UAW, which represents about 40,000 hourly workers at Ford, is hoping to take advantage of that.
They may have a better ability to pay than GM or Chrysler.
Peter Berg is professor of employment relations at Michigan State University. He says the union will be pushing for higher wage increases than it got at GM. But he says an even bigger priority for the union will be
some security in the work, trying to move more work to the U.S., and get some security that jobs will be maintained here for Ford UAW workers.
Ford workers have been angry about CEO Alan Mulally's $26.5 million pay package and benefits other managers have had reinstated. Still, the UAW knows its members' futures depend on Ford's success, and that's something that'll be reflected in the negotiations. Ford is the only one of the big three where workers still have the right to strike, but it's unlikely the UAW would decide to exercise it. I'm Elisa Roth for Marketplace.
Well, over in New Jersey, Jeremy, the days of state tax credits for MTV's reality show Jersey Shore, they are over, officially. A state agency just last week approved a $420,000 credit for tax year 2009 because the show was taped in New Jersey. So they
get the tax credit.
They got this tax credit because it dates back a couple of years.
Right.
Well, Governor Chris Christie pulled the plug on what's called the Snooki subsidy. And I know a lot of people have been calling that over there, saying the show perpetuates, quote, misconceptions about the state of New Jersey and its citizens.
Not a good situation for the state of New Jersey, I guess.
You had to go there, didn't you?
You know, Steve, you walk down the street in New York City, and it seems like everybody's doing business. People are making deals.
Oh,
they're
moving,
talking on
shaking,
the phone.
Absolutely.
They're moving, shaking.
Absolutely.
But it all stops when you get down into the subway because the phones don't work down there.
There's no,
there's no cell phone reception down there. So that was the case until today when the Big Apple is testing cell phone service on subway platforms with AT&T and T-Mobile. Now, this could mean a big change for many New Yorkers' commutes, as Sally Herships reports.
New York City is loud, but when you go down into the subway, it's almost quiet. Which Pollyanna Rose really values. She was waiting for the L train to head home from her job as a customer service rep.
That 5, 10, 15 minutes is really, really important. I appreciate it because I deal with people all morning. I just want a little quiet time, honestly.
Chris Tokar said she's fine with the idea, until she realized other passengers might be using their phones as well.
Well, yeah, that might be a problem.
Then there's the issue of always being available, which is what instantly came to mind for 26-year-old web designer Rachel Bushy.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And so my workday is going to start like another hour earlier and will end an hour later.
The only passenger I found who likes the idea wasn't a New Yorker. She was visiting from Washington, D.C., where the metro is already wired for cell phones. In New York, I'm Sally Herships for Marketplace.
Consumer confidence in this economy has basically stayed the same in the last month. The private research group, the Conference Board, said consumers remain jittery about the economy and about spending too much money. And with the economy stuck in neutral, the Federal Reserve has pledged to do several things to give it the best shot at growing, at least to try and get a kick started. Fortune Magazine's Alan Sloan is with us now to talk about the Fed's influence or lack of it these days. Is it getting people excited? Morning, Alan.
Good morning, Steve.
What happened to the old days when so many people watched what the Fed had to say?
What happened is people used to think the Fed, back during Alan Greenspan's days, people thought the Fed was much, much more powerful than it actually is. Now, with him long gone and Bernanke being collegial and all of these problems, the Fed is getting increasingly tuned out by the markets and its power is declining, no question.
Was it a personality difference between Greenspan and Bernanke?
Part of it is personality, because with Greenspan, no one was ever allowed to dissent publicly from what he wanted to do, none of the Fed governors, and Bernanke lets them dissent. But I think it's more circumstances. The United States is less influential than it was when Greenspan was around, and Bernanke has less control over the U.S. economy than Greenspan had over the U.S. economy. So the hand keeps getting weaker and weaker, and yet people in this country expect some sort of miracle from the Fed, and they expect Big Daddy to somehow save them, and I'm afraid it isn't going to happen.
Well, I mean, does the Fed change this then? I mean, is there any way to go back?
You can't go back. All you can do is go forward. And what the Fed is, I think, trying to do is to stop confidence from eroding and try to increase asset values and play for time, which in many ways is what Greenspan did, but now it's much more obvious. And because the Fed has done so many things, it's shown most of its hand, so it's weaker than it was because everybody knows it doesn't have much in reserve.
So if the Fed, Alan, is losing its influence, who's gaining influence?
Now that is a wonderful question.
Which I'm sure you have the answer to, yeah.
Sure. The answer is nobody.
Really?
It's all just amorphous. You see now, you have all of these announcements coming about coordinated efforts by the central banks. Nobody has the influence. It's just a mess.
Well, a mess that we all have to deal with and report on. Alan Sloan from Fortune Magazine. Alan, thank you so much.
You're welcome, Steve.
And finally, the 1970s comedy duo Cheech and Chong have a new gig, Steve. They're selling brownies.
Oh, no.
Not those kinds of brownies.
Oh, no.
They've been hired by General Mills to star in a new marketing campaign for Fiber One 90-calorie brownies. The online video ad has Cheech and Chong lugging thousands of the brownies in the back of a beat-up van to a music festival called Flaming Pole.
That's such an awesome van you got. What's in the back?
Brownies. Yeah, magic brownies.
Now, Steve, the slogan for the new ad campaign.
Chong just like out of jail.
Yeah, I know, exactly.
He's just out of prison.
Well, Chong is ready to deliver the slogan, which is, get high on fiber.
Let's hope the ad campaign doesn't go up in smoke.
Oh, this is just a really, this podcast is full of terrible
really
cliches.
Puns. It's yeah. Punalicious today.
Punalicious.
Yes.
In Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And I'm Steve Chiotakis. Enjoy your Tuesday. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
And this is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.